What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and we're back with our expert corner interviews, my favorite conversations every single week where we get to talk to short-term rental investors, sharing the good, the bad, the ugly, all the ups and downs of investing in short-term rentals and what it takes to succeed. And we got a repeat guest, a special guest, is super excited to talk about a couple of the, you know, how we're creating some opportunities in these markets right now. But we've got Mr. Eric Young joining us. Eric, appreciate you joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Sean.
Yeah, absolutely. This is going to be a fun conversation. Before we start, let's remind everybody where you're from, what pays the bills, what markets you're in currently, and then we'll dive into a deep conversation about how to kind of create opportunities in some of these challenging markets right now.
Cool. I operate in Marathon, Florida as a contractor, property manager, and realtor. A background, a kind of quick summary of how I ended up there. I used to be a superintendent for a commercial contractor in Denver, Colorado, and I quit that job to flip houses, which I did full time for about 10 years. That was a real rewarding deal. And as I started making money for my house flips, I wanted to invest that in short term rental properties, which is how I ran across Vodacy, because I wanted help doing that the right way. And I looked at a lot of different markets, decided I really wanted to put money into Marathon. And that's where I got started. I guess my first one, I did a ground up property because of my construction background in Marathon. Mm-hmm. Screwed some things up with, I built too nice of a house. The insurance it was over $1 million replacement value. So the insurance value was, the insurance cost was $70,000 a year.
Wow.
For a vacation rental. So if the same house would have been cheaper, that it was projected to be $7,000 a year.
But 10x, just because it hit over the $1 million mark.
For replacement value of the structure only. Yeah.
Wow.
Jeez. But it ended up being a great thing because I sold it for a big profit and then went and bought my first value add property in Marathon, which is, I think, what we're kind of wanting to talk about here.
Yeah.
And so in Marathon specifically, which if people aren't familiar where that is, that's in the Florida Keys. It's halfway between Key West and Key Largo. Most people know about those two places. Yeah. Marathon's right in the middle, and it's the only place in all of the Keys that you can do weekly rentals besides on Duval Street in Marathon or in Key West. So it's a not very well-known town that is made to be, the whole town centers around vacation rentals, and it's a high-end fishing kind of vacation place.
Right, so. Yeah. And so you mentioned value add. Obviously, no surprise with your background on the fix and flip for as long as you did. That's going to be probably a key component with a lot of what you were looking for originally. Back when you bought your first one, just based on your natural like tendencies and wanting to do the value add, that was before you really, the value add is almost kind of a, what we're going to talk about a little bit more today is like, it's almost what we're looking for to create some of these opportunities. Back then it was just more, that was your background, right? And you were like, hey, I'm going to might as well get some value on the front end when I buy as well and fix it up and get some, you know, a forced appreciation, if you will. But remind us the time frame of when you bought that first one.
Yeah. So this would be 2022. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's 2023. No, it's 2023. It would have been right around March, 2023. And the reason I bought the house I did was going through the Vodacy course, like after buying into it and doing my market research, I realized there was a lot more money in the 4-bedroom houses than there were in the 3-bedroom houses. That was kind of the supply demand curve. Hardly any, most of the Keys were built out in the 70s and there were 3-bedroom houses, but there was a big demand for the 4-bedrooms. So in looking at for a good property, the 4-bedrooms all cost so much more than the 3-bedrooms that it was hard to make the numbers work. So I just found a 3-bedroom and converted it into a 4-bedroom for, you know, all in way less than I could have bought a 4-bedroom for.
Right. And then ultimately, I think you're the number one 4-bedroom in that market, skyrocketed to the very top of that market within, you know, since you've launched, right? I mean, that's operating at the very top of that market right now.
Well, Yes and no. So it's, yeah, it definitely is the best ROI of anything by far of a four bedroom, but there are some direct oceanfront $3-5 million houses that are,
that have higher growths on the top. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. But I have mine, I bought for $1.5 million and I'm outperforming several, you know, $2.5 million properties.
Right. So, nice. Awesome. Yeah. So you did that once and then you decided to do it again, right? You decided to go, you converted a, was it a duplex or a triplex? It was a multifamily that you converted to a bigger property now, right?
It was a triplex. Yeah. Yeah, that I turned into one large single family.
Yeah.
So I think it was a three bedroom unit and then two bedroom units. And I just made it one six bed, five bedroom house.
Yeah. And how now, like, as far as like, obviously the value add for those of you that are, listening, as you know, when we're talking about value add type properties, we're looking for properties that you can go in and buy similar to like fix and flips. You're going to buy them. You're going to put some money into them. They're going to be worth more when you're finished. That after repaired value is going to be worth more than what you're into it altogether. And so you force some like nice equity in there. And that's really what Eric's wanting to do, but also saying, okay, I also need to make sure that I'm investing on the back end to bring in the revenue that is getting my unfair share of that revenue side of it. So you're really navigating two worlds. We talk a lot about the money we're going to invest in these properties to bring them to life, create these unique experiences, thinking about our target audience and really making these properties come to life, tell the story of the area and just create and be part of that massive, the great experience. But it's when you're doing both, right? You're looking at these properties saying, I'm going to look at it as a project and put some value add in this property. And then I'm going to look at increasing the revenue. And like you mentioned, you got $1.5 million property that competes with $2.5 million properties. Well, if you run the math and you're making the similar revenue, there's a way better return on that investment on the smaller one bed or the $1.5 million investment than $2.5 million investment. Right. And so ultimately, we started looking at that because some of the challenges in the market right now, the challenges are prices are still pretty dang high. They're not really coming down a ton. We can negotiate, which is nice. It's been a soft kind of slow, like weird market for the last couple of years where it's just like, is it going up? Is it going down? Like prices aren't coming down. It doesn't seem like the buyers are out there, but nobody's moving on prices. And then that people are still buying pretty fast. So we got high prices still, we got really high interest rates. And the numbers on the surface, many of these properties, especially down in Marathon and most of these higher price, high quality areas, they're expensive to buy. And so if you're buying them at high prices, you got high note, you know, debt service because of the interest rates, it's hard to cash flow. It's hard to make money. And so we started calling Eric up and saying, hey, Eric, we've got a lot of buyers and we're looking for some of these markets that have some opportunities in. What is the market like down there? And we started really looking and creating our own opportunities, which is very unique in the sense that not everybody has the skill set, but two, you know, it's a little bit capital intensive up front because you have to also, you have the value add, you have fix up cost, you have furnishing cost, you have all that stuff. So it keeps some people that don't have the capital out of it, but we're looking at it and it's creating our own opportunities in a market that's a little bit of a struggle right now.
Yeah. Yeah. There's one that we're doing with about a C member. Is it all right if I talk a little bit about Adam's deal So it's a four bedroom, four bathroom house, but this house has this big workshop down on the main floor. And in Marathon, it's hard to find space that would be down at a lower level. So there's a garage and down, your garages are normally lower than the rest of the house, and same in this house. And there's a workshop behind it. And most of the time in Marathon, those are below flood. And you can't add bedrooms and bathrooms down on those levels. But in this particular house, because of how high it's built up, the garage floor is above flood. So in looking at all the opportunities, this particular house had two things going for it. It had the ability to add that bedroom down in the back workshop area, even though it was down at the garage level. And then also it had a walk-in closet on the master that's so huge. And the layout was perfect to turn it into its own bedroom we eliminate the massive bedroom or massive closet and added a bedroom. So instead of being a four, when we're done, we're going to have a 6.5 and we're buying it for two. And I think all in, we're going to be somewhere around, was it 2.5? Here, let me open it. I don't want to say the wrong numbers. Yeah, we'll be into it 2.6 and it should be worth just 2,670. So just under 2.7, and it should be worth around three, maybe even a little more when we're done. Yeah. So, you know, not only does Adam get a house that's, you know, there's no way you could buy this house when we're done at 2.7 million. It would, right. It would cost a lot more. He gets all this equity on top of cash flow.
Yeah. And then also going from a 4 to a 6 brings in a lot more cash flow. Right. So, you've got that, you got those extra bedrooms bringing in higher cash flow or higher revenue, which means better cash flow. And so that's, that's a really good breakdown of what we're looking to do on some of these and why, if we start to look at strategies like this, why there's still some really good deals out there to be able to go in, buy these properties. And I would say, like, it's not like we really bought it at a massive discount at the 2 million. It's probably about that. It's probably about what it is worth right now. And so if we can find these things that are, we're not going in and getting these crazy discounts, but we're paying retail value, but with the idea that we're going to add some things to it. And a lot of times people are like, yeah, I'm going to do a garage conversion. Well, in this market, you can't really convert a garage to bedrooms in most of the houses. And so when something like this comes available and you're very, you know what's going on, you know what you're looking for, all of a sudden you got to really, I mean, you're going to put $600,000 into the property. And some of that is the furnishings and the artworks and all that stuff. But if we just look at the value add portion of it, what is the value add portion of it? Probably somewhere around 4 of that 6, maybe. And you're getting almost a $300,000 lift. That's a real nice return on that investment.
It's a unique property in that it's pretty new, but the backyard never got finished. So we're spending a little over 100 on a pool. We're going to spend about 130 on landscaping, then 75 adding a bathroom and two bedrooms. And then there's your permit fees, plans, interest, like a bunch of golf costs.
So that's not even as much as I thought. That was only about 300K, right? That they're putting into it
to get a value. I think all in, we 352 with the plans and permit, but it's 335. Yeah.
So that's because the other investment, the rest of that investment is going to be furnishing it, getting it set up, all that stuff, which that's going to help us with the revenue, the return on our, like the revenue, increasing the revenue, the return on the investment from a cash flow perspective. But that value add on the front end, all of a sudden, you know, you're sitting in a really good position equity wise before you even start the game, right? Before you even launch your property. And so once that's done, your basis is already a lot lower than what it would be if you had to go rebuy that property after you did all that stuff. And so it's a very good strategy right now in the fact that some of these markets are pretty tough out of the gate to be able to buy properties. Buy them, set them up and get them online at the current interest rates, at current prices. But if we can find some of these value add type of deals and then be able to do some of that stuff, you know, increase the revenue because of the value add, but also just walking into a lot of equity, it's absolutely something that investors should be thinking about and it should be on their radar. But you got to find guys like Eric and in those markets that you're in, because you've got to have somebody that really understands that game, right? And understands how to do that. And that's what we love down there in Marathon, where we can tap right into you, Eric, and talk to me a little bit about that. One of the things that is super, super important, we were just talking about project management before we hit play. And I'm like, hey, listen, we're right in the middle of project management on a couple of projects. And I'm like, I do not, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of T's to cross, I's to dot. And you got to make sure you've got the right partners in those areas, and why we love tapping into your expertise down there, because it's easy to look and say, I mean, you were in the fix and flip game for 10 years. I was in the fix and flip game for 6. And the mistakes that people make on what it's going to take to get a property to the finish line are massive if they've never done it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There's so many, as you call it, dragons around a corner. There's way more of them in a remodel kind of situation than anyone realizes. I mean, you've got government. There's corruption where people want you to skid their pockets. There's the laborers that don't show up because they're all drunk in a certain market. Yeah. Marathon's definitely that way. Just getting people to show up. Yeah. Licensing, neighbors calling you into this city because the silt fence isn't quite up right. There's so many ways to get burned along the whole way from start to finish.
Yeah, it makes it difficult for just the average retail investor to navigate, right? And I think that the lesson or the point that I want to make is there's a lot to happen here, but you can line yourself up with the right partners that actually have that experience and be able to get to the finish line on these and done correctly. This can be massive wins on the front end, especially as you're building that portfolio. Like it would be really nice to have $300,000 of equity, real equity that we know is there before we even start. So if something ever happened, I could sell the property and I'm profitable right out of the gate. I've made my money, right? Even on the one that you just said, you know, your very first one, you built it ground up, your construction background. You're like, hey, listen, I'm going to do this right. I'm still going to build a quality asset, quality area. I'm into it right. I'm buying it right because you're building it. And then like, holy crap. My insurance is 70 grand a year when I thought it was going to be seven. It's 10X. There goes my cash flow. I'm not going to make much money as a short-term rental, but you've got an asset that is worth a lot more than you're into it. So you sell it. Like you said, it's, you know, I was in a good position. We make money on it. We roll it into something else. And so it's always a really good hedge against your downside when you can walk into a property with a lot of equity. And most of the time right now, you have to build in that equity.
Yeah. With that first ground up house, I learned a lesson that maybe some of the people listening to this, if you're a house flipper or contractor somewhere and you've only been in your one market, it's easy to think that you've got it figured out and, oh, I'll just go there and yes. build there. It's just like here. Boy, was that not the case at all. I knew the Denver market like the back of my hand, and I thought it'd be easy to go build in Marathon. It was not. It was completely different, a whole different world with a whole different set of rules. Yeah. And I mean, ultimately, it was great because I got to cut my teeth on it. But it was very difficult.
It goes down like the point. We have what we call a white glove service where we work with investors that do turnkey prop. They want a turnkey property. They want to go in and buy these types of properties. They call us up, and with Vodacy, we help people all over the country because they follow a blueprint. They can buy in whatever market that works for them. We can make some introductions, and we can plan out the whole thing. But they've got to go in and execute on it, right? And so it works, and that we underwrite everywhere. And they come to us on white glove, and we tell them six markets that we work in. And they're like, what do you mean? Like, you can't work in other markets. And it's not that we can't underwrite. It's not that we can't buy them. It's because we don't have the partners like you in, you know, a whole bunch of markets. And we know that every single market has its own little nuances. And because we've been in this game long enough to realize that, holy crap, it's not the same, like you said, to build a house in Denver as it is in Marathon. And even though we've developed and built houses and we've done this, we have to be dialed into that specific market. And if we're not, we won't run down the road of saying, hey, we're going to go and do it for you, if you will.
Yeah.
What are some of the differences or the big challenges? Do you feel like it's kind of different all across the board? Or do you think there's some key parts of that process that are like different and that you need to focus on?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of different things. One of them is just, you know, understanding the rules around flood zones and FEMA. And if a house is built before 1974, then it's grandfathered in and you can have ground level. And even if you buy a ground level house with a garage, you can convert the garage into living space if you elevate the floor to match the rest of the house, even though it's below flood, if it was built before 1974. But you have to know, I have to raise the garage floor up to match the house and make sure you're good on heights and your ceiling. And so that's a piece that's not in Denver. There's a lot of corruption in Marathon where some people get a permit really quick, and to other people you'll submit for your permit and they'd wait 2-3 weeks and then tell you, like, one little sentence about, like, this isn't quite right. And then you respond to that. And then, oh, this isn't quite right. And then this, and then it just goes and goes and goes for 3, 4, 5 months, you, in Marathon, the locals don't like people that are not local coming in and making money in their city. So they purposely will destroy you on your fire, your inspections, your annual inspections. There's now it's a lady named Carly. I won't even get, there was a different lady that now is dead. And there's a homicide investigation who was the fire inspector. So there's that. I mean, it's the stuff you see in some of these movies and the keys is not that far off, like square groupers in the ocean full of drugs and money and stuff. Like that's real. It happens. Yeah. And there's people paying other people off. And anyway, I was able to make the right relationships and fund the right campaigns for city council people. And I kind of learned how that world worked and I'm able to operate in it now, but coming in off that first house, oh man, I had another thing coming. Like they were just throwing roadblock after roadblock up at me.
Yeah. It's interesting. We've seen that in a lot of smaller, like very tight markets and you're like, what is like, this is like out of the movies, right? Like, what are you talking about? And it happens, right? It's one of those things that just, we tend to find it in smaller town type of areas, and not that, I mean, Florida Keys is very well known, but it's still kind of that small town. We're going to take care of our own. There's a good old boys club. And if you're not part of it, good luck. And you got to figure out how to operate within it. When I go to Hawaii and we talk about people that invest and build and do any sort of, if you're pulling any permits and stuff over there, very difficult if you're not local to get a lot of stuff done. And it's another market. I've heard the exact same thing. The other thing that's interesting in Florida, and you mentioned we're doing a bunch of landscaping on this property. We've got some down in Tampa that we're doing. And I didn't realize until we got into it is, you can't just cut anything down. You can't just go in and clear out stuff, right? They have very, very strict protections on certain native trees, like with the mangroves. We can't touch a lot of the mangroves. We can't, there's some oak trees in Tampa that we're not allowed to touch. And we're putting pools in and we're putting these cool backyard resort areas in. And if you don't know that going into it, you buy this property, you close and you think you're going to do one thing and you're like, oh, I'm going to clear this out. And we're going to do that. And you're like, no, you can't touch that stuff. Like, I know you just bought that, that house and that's your backyard, but you're not allowed to do some stuff on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely easy to get burned there.
Yeah. And because, you know, I'm from Utah and whatever you buy, you can cut whatever you want down. You can burn your whole lot down if you want. Right. They don't, you know, and I don't know how Denver was, but it's like, there's, when it comes to landscaping stuff, you can kind of do whatever you can clear out whatever you want. And that's not the case down in Florida. So just little things like that just pop up. And as kind of the conversations rolled to that, which is why we always stress having the right partners. And like we've, as many properties as I bought, every single time I go into just from the simplest part of the process, every time I go into a new market, I have a local realtor helping me every single time. And we actually have my wife has a real estate license. We have a brokerage here in Utah and we bought plenty of properties. I never just call the listing agent and to buy the properties. I always work with those local realtors as a buyer's agent, just from the very beginning, because I know how many nuances there are in every single market. And that's just on the buying side of the house, let alone if you're going to be doing any sort of construction, any sort of rehab. And we've had many of our members on this podcast talk about that. If you're going to do any sort of remote value add, make sure you've got the right partner and vet them out and understand what their expertise are, how long they've been there, what they were doing. Because if you don't and you try to do it remotely, a lot of times those local contractors will completely take advantage of you. You're not going to get things done. And that's what happens the most. They, like, somebody tries to do it, like, I'll just hire the subs remotely and I'm not working with the general in those areas. And they ultimately end up, you know, nothing gets done because they're like, ah, he's not here. He's across the country. He's making a phone call tomorrow. We'll do what we want to today. Right. And, and all of a sudden, 3 month project turns into a year long project and you're like, hey, what happened? I'm paying bills on this thing the whole time. Right. That's the most common thing we hear, overruns on time, specifically many, many overruns on time. And then, and budget overruns obviously as well. but it's and it's less likely to happen if you have those right partners there. There's always stuff that happens in these things, and you need to have somebody there advocating for you, fighting for you, and making sure that your best interests are taken into account on these projects. And why, when we go down to Florida and Marathon specifically, we call you up and we say, hey, listen, Eric, we got an investor down here, you know, or you'll send us a property. We'll have the game plan on it. And we're saying, hey, listen, you're going to be with us from start to finish on these properties. And it's, we won't go into markets that are value add type properties, even though I do want people listening to this to realize those are where the opportunities lie in a lot of these markets. And so if that's the case, you need to start networking or plug into a network that has competent professionals to help you get from point A to point B and then ultimately the finish line, right?
Another unique thing in the Keys with value add properties, if the reason it made sense to take that triplex and turn it into a single family the Keys, because of evacuating people out in a hurricane event down Highway 1 is a concern. They won't let you build, like if you buy a lot and you just want to build a house on it, it's not good enough to have a lot. The lot's half the equation. You have to have a building right also. And they're very limited. They hand out, they keep slowing it down too, but something like 15 building rights every 6 months for all of the Middle Keys. So they're kind of choking off the new construction. But another way to get a building right is to buy one from somebody. So say you tear down your house, you can sell the building rights to somebody else and they can transfer lots and then they can build on a different lot. Well, the same thing's true when you take, for instance, a triplex and turn it into a single family. I now don't need three building rights because I took my three units and made it one unit. So I sold off the two extra building rights, which helps pay for the remodel, right? Which helps lower your out of cost expense.
Are building rights down there expensive? Is it significant to get a building right, even if you can find one?
It's fluctuated a lot. They're worth somewhere around 95 to 105 right now, 1,000. That they got up as high as like 175 for Marathon. And if you were buying Isla Mirada, which is just a little further north, those building rights are like $250,000 a piece.
Yeah. So. Wow. That's interesting. It's like out here, we have to have water rights, right? So you don't have the building rights, but you can't build it without water. And there's only so many water rights that you can, and if you're developing anything or even just wanting to build one home, you got to go find your water rights. And they just are skyrocketing in value out here because they're harder and harder to get. And it's kind of something similar, but again, it's every area is a little bit different and you don't know. Just like you're saying, I can go buy a lot out here. And if I don't have the water rights and the to be able to build the property, I got to go buy it. And that could cost me an extra 50 or 60 grand for out here specifically. Out there, you buy a lot, you think you can build on it, doesn't have a building right on it. And you're an extra 100 grand that you didn't plan on to go get a building right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. But also an opportunity if you see a property that has more than one or multiples that you can turn into one. And you're like, oh, listen, I can fund a couple $100,000 of the remodel with these building rights just from the purchase and ultimately a lot less money out of pocket, like you said. And, you know, so opportunities on both sides. One, save yourself from walking into a buzzsaw that you didn't know was there. Mm-hmm. Two, if you do know it's there and you can find some properties with extra building rights that you're converting, it's a massive bonus to be able to fund the project itself.
Yeah. One thing we didn't touch on with value add that I think is a huge piece of the equation that I've enjoyed on the two I did is to say, if you buy a house and you bonus depreciate it before you remodel it, and then most of these value adds are every penny you spend on it most of the time is depreciable in less than 14 years. So you can do a second bonus depreciation and almost write off your entire remodel and all the furnishings, right? So if you buy it and it has furniture in it that's old and you can rent it out, so you got your 2 weeks and then you can do your bonus depreciation in that first year. And then the very next year, do another one. You kind of get two really good write-offs in one property.
Double bonus, yeah. Yeah, that's exactly. So if you're, especially like this time of the year, that's a more likely scenario, right? You're going to buy it. You're not going to be able to do all the value add by the end of the year or get it in service, most likely. You're running out of time to do that stuff. And then, so you're saying, hey, listen, you can actually take all that money you're putting into it and do another depreciation bonus, accelerated depreciation on all that extra money you put in. And yeah, you're exactly right, where you're kind of doubling up. Now, if you do it all in 1 year, just take it all in the first year, right? But if you're in this time of the year and you're not going to get it done next year, all that money you're putting into it, just do it again, right? And you're able to have another big tax benefit from having all that value add that you're putting into the property.
Yeah, I think you can ultimately bonus depreciate more overall if you do it twice, right? So if I was buying a property in January, I would still, if I was going to do a big remodel on it, I would want to have it cost segged on the way it is when I buy it.
Yeah.
And they'll break it down in a big portional write off, right? And now I do another one and keep track of all the money I spend on it, every penny, and have Mike do the really nice build out, which he already gives you perfect documentation for it. And you do a second cost seg. When you add the two individual cost segs together, the amount you can bonus depreciate from, I haven't done it where I've just done it once, so I can't give you exactly the difference, but just looking at the numbers, it looks like you get a lot more bonus depreciation doing it in two shots.
Interesting. Yeah. I would love to actually see what it would come in at all together versus splitting it up. That's a really good point, because you're saying your overall percentage of what you're going to get, you feel like is higher if you do it right out of the gate and then the second one and then combine them, right?
Yeah, because so like as a micro example, you've got some cabinets from the 80s that are in there, and if you can bonus depreciate those out while they're there, And then later you rip the cabinets out, you put new cabinets in. Well, now you can bonus depreciate the new cabinets and you got to do it twice, where I don't think you get a double dip them if you don't do it.
That's awesome. That's a very interesting strategy that could be like, because a lot of people listening, I mean, this is a massive, an asset that has massive tax advantages for us as investors with that bonus and accelerated depreciation. And you're exactly right. You're putting that extra money in and you've got an actual cost. They're not guessing on, you're right. They're going to give you some value for the cabinets that are in there based on the year and the lifespan and everything else. But now you've got the brand new cost to have that bonus depreciation coming out based on that basis being a lot higher.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Love it. Well, listen, my friend, we are going to wrap it up. I know you told me before you were right in the middle of a couple projects. And so we're going to, I always appreciate the time you guys are willing to spend, Eric, and talk about this stuff, let people listen in on the conversation. But I wanted to get you on and to talk about that opportunity of value add type properties in this type of an environment, but also which I love that we touched on the importance of, if you're going to do that, it doesn't come without its own set of headaches, and why it's so important to have the right team on the back end if you're gonna go do something like a value add. But the rewards at the end can be very, very worth it to take a project like that on if you've got the capital and the wherewithal to get a property from start to finish and add that value, walk into some equity, get it set up to ultimately perform at the top of these markets on the back end. We talk a lot about that on the podcast. We don't talk a lot about the value add. So I appreciate you jumping on, my friend. It's been a great conversation.
Cool. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And those of you listening, we know how valuable your time is. We always appreciate you spending it with us. It means a lot. And we know that we hope you get value out of this conversation. We hope you walk into this game with your eyes wide open. If you did get value, give us a like or a thumbs up on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. Those things are very much appreciated, because the only way the show grows is organically through you guys. If you know somebody else that would like to be a part of these conversations, share the show. It's also appreciated. And the final most important thing I ask at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today to start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.